The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, I'm your hometown girl, Shadate Hargett Hill, from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Connect to Success. For the next half hour, I will be reading articles from FamilyConnect.org, MN.gov, and NFB.org, all in an effort to help you, your family, and friends connect to your own success. Let's get started. We're starting with an inspirational story from a different area in Minnesota, that is. Dan Bernstrom is a happy man, though always busy. Every day he's up before dawn to get a bit of writing done. He's already sold three of his engaging children's books to HarperCollins. The first one, Day in the Eucalyptus Tree, both are available in bookstores, and two more will follow. After an early morning of writing, he's off to his day job as the coordinator of the learning lab at Southeast Technical College. In addition to managing the lab, Dan puts in several hours tutoring students in a wide range of subjects. It can be challenging, especially in subjects I don't know as well, but it is always satisfying. In the evenings, Dan often has parenting responsibilities for his two young children. Even with this busy schedule, Dan is grateful for all of it. It's a simple life, he reflects, but I'm very happy with it. Dan even appreciates paying taxes. Working with SSB showed me the value of the services available to Minnesotans, he says, and I'm glad to give back. Not too many years ago, Dan could not imagine that any of these ordinary pieces of satisfying life would ever come his way. In high school and college, Dan appreciated dramatic changes in his vision. He has a degenerative condition called juvenile X-linked retinosis, which, like macular degeneration, is characterized by a deterioration of the central vision. As his sight worsened, much that Dan took for granted, like driving a car or reading a book, began to slip from him. Like many people who lose vision, Dan alternated between denial and fear. More and more, my transportation options narrowed, Dan remembers. First, I couldn't drive at night. Then I couldn't drive when it was rainy or foggy. Then I nearly hit someone, and it was so terrifying to me that I quit on my own. Even so, Dan wasn't quite ready to admit to his friends the extent of his vision loss. I would say that I forgot my glasses, or that I just didn't like driving. I would depend on others for rides. I had no idea how to get around on my own. With the steady loss of functional vision, Dan could only imagine a bleak future. I didn't see how I could do anything. How could I apply for a job? How could I date? Who would go out with me? How would I be able to live? In college, Dan's deteriorating vision began to seriously impede his schoolwork. As my functionability began to drop, it would take me longer and longer to take tests. I was struggling to read. That's when I realized I couldn't keep running away from this much longer. Dan turned to State Services for the Blind and our workforce development team. His counselor recommended adjustment to blindness training as a way to gain the skills he needed to live successfully with his less vision. In 2009, Dan took a tour of Blind Inc. There he found blind people doing things better than he had done them when he had sight. I said to myself, the way these people are acting doesn't seem like life is standing in their way. I learned how to do things I never imagined doing. Dan continued. We went out in the woods and cut down our own Christmas tree, then brought it home and decorated it. I learned how to cook, how to clean, how to get around. I did everything wearing the blindfold so I had no vision, and I learned how to appreciate life without seeing at all. Dan shared a telling example of the differences that adjustment to blindness training made for him. Before I started the program, I had applied to 10 graduate schools and didn't get into any of them. But when I applied after I had learned how to use technology and not depend on my failing vision, I applied to two schools I was really interested in and was accepted at both. On his way to becoming a published author, Dan enrolled in Master of Fine Arts program at Hamline University in St. Paul. There he received the Critical Thesis Award in writing program. I actually found I was way ahead of my classmates. Dan remembers, because I was taking the bus everywhere and always reading while I was waiting for the bus or riding. In his final year of school, Dan wanted to push himself to make sure he could balance both work and writing. He found work as a tutor and an evening job as a custodian. It added another hour of bus time and a 2-mile walk. But the grueling schedule and the self-discipline gave him the confidence to know he could meet the challenges he set for himself. Even so, after graduating from Hamline, finding full-time work wasn't easy. He met prospective employers who were unsure that he could do the job with his limited vision. "I've learned to be completely upfront about my vision," Dan says. "I tell people what I learned to do getting around downtown Minneapolis wearing sleep shades. I'd ask folks to give me the chance to prove what I can do." Now Dan has proven what he can do every day. "It's a pretty simple life," Dan says of his days of writing, working, and spending time with his family, "but it's a good one." Our next story comes from NN.org. Thriving as a senior with vision loss. As individuals, Ruth Weber, Ann Nelson Murphy, Roz Stremling, and Barb Spice are each quite impressive. Together, they're nearly unstoppable. To be with these four women is to be surrounded by stimulating conversation, lots of laughter, and plenty of energy. You might get the feeling you were sitting down with friends who had known each other for a long time. The truth is that these four met in 2015 at an adjustment to blindness class at Blind Inc. in Minneapolis. "You might say we're birds of a feather," Ann says. Then Roz picks up, "We have different backgrounds and histories, but we all have the kind of attitude that if there's an obstacle in our way, we can do something about it." There are murmurs of assent all around the table. The 6-week class at Blind Inc., like similar programs in other parts of the state, teaches practical skills for living with less vision and gives seniors a chance to network with others who are facing similar circumstances. SSB made it possible for Ruth, Ann, Barb, and Roz to attend Blind Inc. It's part of the suite of options available from SSB's senior services team to help seniors remain independent and active. Ruth, now in her 80s, has been blind for over 30 years. In that time, she has been an avid traveler, having visited more than 100 countries. While she's more than self-sufficient as a blind person, Ruth realized that there were still things she could learn, especially in the area of technology. And so she welcomed the opportunity to take part in the classes. Like others of her generation, Ruth was daunted by the prospect of learning to use technology. "Then I told myself, maybe I can learn this, and I went out and bought an iPad. I just had to get over that hump and believe that I could do it." Technology was high on Anne's list too, as was cooking. "I was finding that I was spending less and less time in the kitchen as my vision deteriorated," she recalls. Along with the others, Anne learned simple modifications to get cooking again, and she's using technology too. "I found a shortbread recipe with my iPad," she announced to the others, and it turned out great. Barb admits that she had certain unchallenged assumptions about the classes at Blind Inc. "I had a preconceived notion that maybe it was going to be a sad place," she remembers, "but then every day I would leave at the end of the day feeling so much better than when I came." Barb credits those classes, the connection with her classmates, and the support and expertise of SSB's senior services with helping her maintain her active life. She's able to do the things she loves, including gardening, though sometimes I might pull as many flowers as weeds, kayaking, reading, and enjoying art. "I don't see paintings in the same way I used to," she says, "but I find the changes interesting." For Roz, too, the classes have provided a confidence boost. Roz stopped working several years ago, not because she wanted to, but because her vision loss made it difficult to keep working as an activities director. Now she's reconsidering that decision. In the fall of 2015, Roz made the jump from meeting with a counselor in senior services to strategizing about employment options with a counselor in workforce development at SSB. When you're determined to do something, Roz sums up, you can do it. Our next article, A New Life with Vision Loss. When telling her story of adjusting to vision loss, Amy Ward begins this way. September 16, 2012 was the last day that I drove a car. For Amy, that day not only marked the divide between an old life and a new one, but it also marked the beginning of a path that started in fear and brought her to hope. I was living in Hutchinson, Minnesota, Amy reflects. I had never met anyone who was blind. I lived in a town where everyone drove. You had to. Optic neuritis from multiple sclerosis meant that Amy no longer had any depth perception. I was paralyzed with fear, Amy recalls of that time. I was scared to death. A search for help brought her to John Hamilton, SSB's workforce development counselor in Hutchinson. John is awesome, Amy says. Through him and SSB, I learned that I could adjust. I had never even met a blind person before then. In 2014, Amy moved to the Twin Cities and enrolled in Adjustment to Blindness Training at Vision Loss Resources, or VLR. Having never lived in a city or ridden a city bus, the whole experience was new for Amy. The staff at VLR were amazing. In addition to the skills they taught, they listened to me and gave me tremendous emotional support. Being at VLR also gave Amy the experience of meeting blind people who were capable and confident. With her own confidence in herself restored, in 2015, Amy found an apartment in St. Paul and got a job as a receptionist and concierge at Walker Methodist Health Center. With her strong people skills and warm, outgoing personality, it's a job that draws her many evident strengths. Once more, her experience in facing down fear and rebuilding her life gives Amy empathy for the families and the health center patients there, making her a clear asset to the staff. Given all that Amy has accomplished in a short amount of time, it might be surprising to learn that the new skill Amy is most proud of is knitting. It's a skill I learned completely as a person who is visually impaired. Like a lot of things, it's something I never thought I could do. That each of us has the capacity to do things we never thought we could do is one of the lessons that Amy would pass on to anyone else who is struggling with vision loss. It's a whole new world, she says, and you need to be your own advocate. Ask for what you need, be willing to learn, and know that you can do it. In our next section of FamilyConnect.org called Transition, these articles about some inspiring people and ways for up-and-coming college students to connect to their success. Transitions, advocating for your rights as a college student. Advocating for your rights as a college student. Advocate, speak up, fight for your education. Those were the words that flooded my mind as my first semester of college approached. In the years leading up to my high school graduation, my family members, teachers of students with visual impairments, TVI, orientation and mobility instructors, and mentors stressed the importance of advocacy to me and encouraged me to be my best advocate. After all, no one would advocate for me better than I would. Choosing a college. I took these ideas with me as I decided on a college. I began by examining each school's disability services office and speaking with different offices in order to find schools that offered the best services while also meeting my academic and social needs and desires. When I found one that met my needs, I spoke further with their office and explained my disability to them and showed them the tools and technology I use. They let me know what housing, academic, and other accommodations I qualified for, and I did my part to communicate my accommodations to my professors when the time came. College accommodations. I began by sending my professors an email introducing myself and briefly discussing my disability and the technology I utilize. I then asked them if we could meet in person to further discuss everything. I did this so that they would have the opportunity to ask questions and ensure that their course was accessible. This gave me the chance to make sure that they were appropriately communicating with disability services to resolve any situations that would be accessible. This method normally worked for me. Professors were able to learn how I learned, ask any questions they had before the start of the semester, and get to know me as a person. This form of advocating for myself was easy. It was rewarding and led me to have positive relationships with my professors. They learned how to teach someone who was blind, and through our conversations, they often learned what came with blindness in general. They became comfortable asking questions and became interested in learning more about what barriers individuals in the blind and low vision community may face and how they could assist. Life is not all perfect, though, and neither are people. I had my fair share of professors who were unwilling to follow through with my accommodations. I had professors outwardly question my ability to succeed. Some made ableist comments, and some refused to communicate when I sent emails informing them of my rights to an education. During those difficult situations, I always remembered what I was taught in past years. I needed to continue to advocate, speak up, and fight for my education. When I did that, professors eventually complied. There were times I involved disability services, and the added support was helpful. It was a reminder to those professors that they did not have a choice in whether or not they should follow my accommodations. It was law, and they needed to abide by the law. Advocacy work. My journey with advocacy went beyond the classroom. In my second year of college, I became frustrated with the fact that in every course I took, when the topic of diversity or marginalized groups came up, the disability community was always excluded from the conversation. People with disabilities are the most diverse group of people. Disability does not spare any race, gender, sexual orientation, or social class. And yet this group was not being recognized in classroom conversations. I decided to request a meeting with a disability service coordinator on campus so that I could make her aware of my experiences. I explained to her what I was experiencing, and we agreed that in order to have a truly inclusive campus, disability needed to be talked about. I suggested starting a club on campus about disability, and she agreed to be the faculty advisor for the club. We recruited students and had elections. I was elected president by fellow students, and once we had a board, we began hosting events. We invited faculty, staff, and students with and without disabilities to these events. We dug deep into disability-related issues and made it clear that people were welcome to ask any questions they had about disability. In no time, in nearly every lecture, disability was included when discussing diversity or marginalized groups. There was a campus forum about diversity, equality, equity, and inclusion so that the college could work towards a more equitable environment. And I was invited to represent students with disabilities. Starting this campus organization was done through advocacy. It came to fruition because a group of students had a mission to advocate and make change where there was injustice. Advocating for your rights as a college student is not always easy. It takes time, effort, and a whole lot of persistence. But with the right tools, support system, and a voice that isn't afraid to speak up for what is right, you will become your best advocate. As you enter college, remember to advocate, speak up, and always, always fight for your education. Best wishes. This was from a college student called Maria. If you want to learn more about advocation and college conversations, the APH Connect Center is pleased to introduce College Conversations webinar series, a 90-minute form geared toward curious high school students, their family supports, teachers of students with visual impairments, and rehabilitation practitioners. A panel of blind and low vision young adults from across the United States will share firsthand accounts and advice on the initial steps of researching and applying for college. If you're eager to discover how to apply for university, research financial aid, negotiate housing logistics, or how to utilize the services of disabled student services as a person who is blind or low vision, College Conversations has the answer, and you can register. Call toll free 1-800-232-5463. Our next transition story is U.S. Navy veteran loses vision yet keeps his career on course. By the time Captain Benjamin Keeley began losing his vision, he'd already established his own company after amassing decades of experience. And today, although he's semi-retired, he continues operating his successful business and runs a nonprofit. The fact that he has no vision in his right eye and limited vision in his left hasn't slowed him down one bit. Benjamin served in the U.S. Navy, first as a police officer in Guam and later as an internal communication specialist in the Navy's fleet. He retired with the rank of petty officer, then worked in the private sector for Northern Telecom, AT&T, and the company known now as Deloitte, where he ran its Worldwide Solutions Center for Internet Commerce. Following the call of the sea, Benjamin's passion for the marine industry never waned, so he returned to school to earn his captain's license and title and a master's degree in data engineering. He proceeded to join Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines as director of its global database operations, which was when he recognized the need for a single software package that managed all of a company's databases rather than piecing them together. In 1999, he left Royal Caribbean to start his own company, VNS International, which originally stood for Vessel Net Solutions. Benjamin brought together all of his skills from the U.S. Navy, his captain's license training, and his master's degree to provide services for ships, including integrated enterprise resource planning, ERP packages, human resource procurement reservations, ticketing, and everything else needed to operate a vessel. He officially changed the name to VNS International when he expanded to offer the same services to hotels and resorts. After losing sight, unfortunately, Benjamin's time with the U.S. Navy didn't just give him practical experiences. While serving in Guam, he was exposed to Agent Orange, which was in the drinking water in toxic levels. Because of this exposure, Benjamin developed diabetes, kidney failure, and diabetic retinopathy, which is the cause of his vision loss. I've been working with the Blind Veterans Association to prove that's the cause of my issues, and we're making good progress with my claim, he says. I'm also an ambassador for them. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs has provided Benjamin with a great deal of assistance, including rehabilitation and medical care. Some of the technology he learned to use and has come to rely on are closed-circuit TVs, CCTV, and ORCAM, which he calls his bionic eye. ORCAM is a great tool that kind of looks like a memory stick, and it reads what it sees. Benjamin explains, it allows me to read spreadsheets, travel in the airport, and read the signs. It makes you independent. He admits it drives him crazy that he can no longer he can no longer drive a ship or take a drive while listening to music, but his business and life have continued moving forward in every other way. There pretty much isn't anything I can't do that I did before, which is true for anyone in technology who is visually impaired, he says. When I'm working on a ship, I take someone with me just to make sure I don't fall or stick my hand somewhere it should not be. But all my experiences is still in my brain and I can pass it on. Just because I can't see doesn't mean I can't provide knowledge and wisdom to people. Helping others navigate vision loss. In fact, now that Benjamin is semi-retired after adopting his 10-year-old granddaughter, he established a nonprofit called Wisdom for the Blind. The nonprofit hosts portals that provide a variety of information about different types of blindness, services opportunities for activities, policy updates, and more, including podcasts for each of the portals. The first portal is called Wisdom for Blinded Veterans, and he plans to soon launch Wisdom for Blind Kids. In the fourth quarter of 2022, he'll launch a portal for adults who are blind. The podcasts are also available on podcast services. The first episode of the podcast for kids called Did You Know, which is hosted by his daughter, features a friend of Benjamin's who works for NASA Mission Control in Houston and is completely blind. We're trying to let kids know that if they are blind or visually impaired, life's not over, he says. After all, Benjamin should know, having continued to succeed and pursue new ventures after losing most of his vision. After all, Benjamin should know. I'm a firm believer employers should give vets a try, Benjamin says. Actually, they should never put anyone who is blind or vision impaired or has any kind of disability in a bucket as not being valuable. There are a lot of talented people out there. And we all should know that there are great, valuable people, and we are all a part of the society. And before we go, leave you with a poem by John Milton, 1608-1674, on his blindness. When I consider how my light is spent, ere half my days in this dark world and wide, and that one talent which is death to hide, launched with me useless, though my soul more bent to sever, to serve therewith my maker and present my true account, lest he returning chide, doth God exact day labor light denied. I fondly ask, but patience to prevent that murmur soon replies. God doth not need either man's work or his own gifts. Who best bear his mild yoke, they serve him best. His state is kingly, thousands at his bidding speed, and post over land and ocean without rest. They also serve who only stand and wait. Again, that poem was by John Milton, born 1608, died 1674. Unfortunately, our time together is up. Be sure to tune in next month for more stories that provide resources, education, and inspiration. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is available on our website at ncreadingservice.org. Stay inspired to connect to success. I'm your hometown girl, Shadate Hargett Hill, for the North Carolina Reading Service. See you next time on the radio.